All right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. And we have a packed show today, and it's really packed with importance as well as with people. All right, at the back end of the show, we are going to be talking with Arturo O'Farrell, Grammy Award-winning composer, jazz pianist, bandleader, and educator. And we're going to be talking with him about his views on, no, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And that's going to be very interesting. That's the whole theme of the whole show today, all right? That's the theme of the whole show because it's just that damn important. Before speaking to Arturo, we're going to be talking with Layla Hathaway, multiple Grammy Award-winning singer, and she's going to be talking about why she's taking this up and why she thinks everybody else should be involved in this, all right? So we'll be talking about that. And opening the show up, I'm very pleased to bring back to the show again Carl Dix. Carl is one of the signatories of the, one of the initiators of the whole movement to refuse fascism, the whole movement built up around no, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. And I wanted to read something right before we bring Carl on, because I think it's important for people to get this and get this sort of as a framing thing here, all right? Again, this is from refusefascism.org. Imagine if people in the tens of millions filled the streets powerfully declaring that this regime is illegitimate and demanding that it not be allowed to rule. The whole political landscape would be dramatically transformed. Every faction within the established power structure would be forced to respond. And all this could well lead to a situation in which this fascist regime is actually prevented from ruling. This is not some idle dream, but something which could be made a reality if all those who hate what is represented by this fascist regime translate their outrage into firm determination and massive mobilization to create the conditions which make this possible. And that is something we're going to be talking with Carl Dix about, because he is an advocate of doing just that, him and many other people. Carl, welcome to the show again.
Thank you for having me on again, Michael.
Sure, sure. Let's jump into this, man. Basically, let's frame things correctly in here, right? I mean, I think it's important that, well, one, let me start off with this. Just in case people don't know, I think they would have to have their head buried in a bucket of sand to not know, but there was a point here. A big event happened in the halls of Congress the other day, and you were one of the people that was behind that, actually stepping up and calling out, not just Sessions for what he is, but calling out the whole Trump regime and what they plan based on, and this is an example of that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, they were holding hearings on the nomination of Jefferson Beauregard Sessions to be the next attorney general. And this man concentrates what the Trump regime promises for humanity and why we need to stop it. Because this guy is someone who was nominated to be a federal judge, and a Senate that was dominated by the Republicans could not get him through because of the exposure of the racism and white supremacy in his past action. So he wasn't able to be nominated to be a federal judge. And they're bringing him back now to be the attorney general, not because he has changed his views, but because the regime that he is going to serve as attorney general has adopted and embraced those views. But it's even more than his pretty open white supremacy. He is also a proponent of ethnic cleansing of Latino immigrants from the country. He's one of the most extreme advocates of that position. He is someone who has said he doesn't know if grabbing women by their genitals is a crime. Mm. He's not sure about that. He doesn't know if lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people suffer discrimination and need any protection in the law. This is what's being put forward to head up the Department of Justice in the Trump regime. And it is unacceptable. It needed to be called out. And we went in there to call it out in the hearing in the Senate. And just before the hearing started, a couple of people with Code Pink dressed in approximations of Ku Klux Klan outfits stood up to welcome Sessions. Jefferson Beauregard, we here with you, boy. We down with you. You know, and they played it very well, and it was very fitting. And then senator after senator started lauding how Sessions was getting a bad rap. He doesn't have a racist bone in his body. So I decided, well, I'm not going to interrupt these senators. I'm going to wait till Sessions opens up. And about the first words out of his mouth, I just stood up and said, no Trump, no KKK, no fascist USA. Mm-hmm. Sessions is a racist. He's a fascist. And he concentrates what the Trump regime is about and why people need to stop it. January 14th, be in the streets in Washington, D.C. and everywhere else across the country and stay in the streets night after night, manifesting our refusal to accept this regime and our determination to stop it before it gets started. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't get all of that out unimpeded because the Capitol Police were on me pretty quick, knocking over chairs, dragging me over chairs, dragging a person who was with me over chairs and dragging me out. But we were putting forward this and no Trump, no KKK, no fascist USA all the way out. They got the hearing back together. And then another young woman stood up and started to do the same thing. Later on in the day, immigrants' rights activists disrupted it. And at the same time, Howard students and the NAACP were doing a sit-in in Sessions' office. So all of this was going on Tuesday, and it really punctured this myth, this story, the narrative of there's going to be a smooth transition, because there is a lot of opposition, but opposition that must be rallied behind a plan, not just to register that we don't like Trump, Pence, and the rest of his fascist regime that he's putting together, but that we refuse to accept it and are acting to stop it before it gets started.
Now, Carl, just so we can put this into this kind of bigger frame that you're beginning to talk about, let's talk about something that has actually been put out in relation to this whole campaign and some of the questions that have been raised and all these other things, because this, what you did actually also highlighted some of this, which is that, you know, basically there's an argument that's being made by Refuse Fascism to say that, look, everybody, there's a call for many millions of people, tens of millions of people, and for that, that's actually necessary for the sake of humanity. But there's a call for people to put, for all these people to put all of their energy, everything they have, into stopping this Trump-Pence regime before it starts. Let's talk about that. Why is that so important to do this? Why are you, you know, telling people, drop everything, do this?
We're telling people that because this regime will represent untold horrors for people in this country and around the world. I mean, and the man has already told you, he's promised you that his regime will mean that. Muslims having to register. Remember the Star of David and Jewish people in Nazi Germany. A wall on the border with Mexico. 3 million immigrants deported in the first year. Looking at Obama's 2.5 million and saying we can top that in the first year. Demeaning and hatred of women, boasting about sexual assault, promising to take away the right to abortion. Law and order, President, which is code word for unleashing the police and the criminal injustice system even more viciously against black and brown people. And with all of that, the suppression of civil liberties, sucking out the room, suffocating the room that there is to protest all these horrors, you know, even down to the level of threatening people in the media, the lynch mob atmosphere that he whipped up at his rallies. All of this is, it's fascist. That's what it is. And it will mean nothing but horrors for humanity unless we stop it before it gets started. But then the other side of that is because of how horrible it clearly is, there is a very widespread feeling of, boy, this shouldn't happen. There's anguish, despair, fear, and outrage out there very broadly. And if people who felt that way could get unleashed to act on those feelings and to flood into the streets in D.C. and across the country, manifesting that we refuse to accept this fascist Trump-Pence regime, that it is illegitimate and unacceptable, it could create the kind of political crisis that could prevent the Trump-Pence regime from taking the reins of power. Mm-hmm. And we're not just doing this based on there'll be a lot of people in the streets and that'll force them to do it. There are also very big splits at the top among the powers that be. People who, from one end, their basic interest is keeping the system of imperialism and capitalism together. And on that basis, well, they share that with Trump. But there's also a lot of disquiet about his methods for doing that and even differences. But with this surge from below, it creates a political crisis that forces the powers to decide, do they want to go forward with this, and could this end up with people viewing the whole system as illegitimate, or is the best move to keep the system intact, not to go with the extreme program of Trump, but to prevent it from happening in order to try to, you know, quell the uprising from below. So that's what our plan and approach is. And people will say to us, well, you don't have enough people to do that. And on one level, they're right. We don't have enough right now. But if those who see the need for this act and begin to act, we had a meeting last night, and I said to people at this meeting, if we can get hundreds out in D.C. Saturday afternoon, January 14th, and then we take our message throughout D.C. on Saturday afternoon into the evening and even into the night, and then go back out Sunday, go out to the churches, mosques, and other religious institutions, go into the neighborhoods, reach out to everybody we know, and are back out in the streets Sunday, and then again on Monday, and then again on Tuesday. The hundreds can become thousands, can become tens and hundreds of thousands, and can become millions, with the same process going on across the country. This is how this could come together. And it is a real shot to prevent this regime from taking the reins of power.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's pursue some of the things that you've begun to speak about, because I think that what you're saying is extremely important in terms of this overview and what needs to come together and what needs to happen, what can happen off of that. Because I was thinking about this, you know, there is an Obama, you know, in what really is a criminal speech that he gave recently when yesterday when he was talking about, oh, he's leaving and he's giving this speech. And when he started to talk about Trump and all this other stuff, and people started booing and started saying things about this. And he told them to calm down, come, this is not the way we do things. And he argued for peaceful transition and work to survive while we fight the good fight and wait until the next election, all this kind of stuff. And it goes along with these things that there are people out there who say, look, I'm down with what you're saying, but really, you got to accept reality in the long run. You've got to accept reality. You've got to actually do it. Deal with what you got. You've been dealt the hand of Trump. Let's deal with what you got and take care of this. Try to do as much as we can during his term in office and look to come out better in the next round of things. Let's talk about that. That seems to be a deadly road to me.
Yes, it is a very deadly road because, look, that's like, okay, Trump will get in and we'll continue to position and be ready for the next time around. And look, people said something similar in Nazi Germany when Hitler took power. And Hitler took power through legitimate means. There was an election. He didn't win the majority, but he won a plurality, and he was appointed the head of the government. And from that position, he began to eliminate his opponents, the people who were trying to position themselves for the next election. First, he came for the communists. Then he came for the trade unionists. Then he came for Jewish people. And stripping away people's rights to build resistance to him. This is what a fascist regime does. And then you have to look at what is it that Trump has promised to do. Look at his threats to the media. Look at his threats to jail his opponent in the presidential election, and even the hints that maybe she should be assassinated. This is what a fascist regime does. I mean, by any definition, this regime is that. And to say, well, they're going to take power, they won the election, and we should work for the next one. I mean, one of the things that has already been going on is the suppression of black voters, Latino voters, and even young voters with voter ID laws and other laws and regulations that have been passed even in a period where the Democrats had the presidency and things like that. In this situation, with Trump as president, with Republicans controlling Congress, with the Trump's ability to appoint Supreme Court judges, waiting till the next election could be waiting forever, because by that point they will have been able to make greater strides than they've already made in suppressing the vote. So this is really a deadline, and we should look at history, because people in Nazi Germany were even saying, after Hitler, us. And that ain't the way it worked out, because when fascists get the reins of power in their hands, they use that to totally transform the situation and crush their opponents. We cannot take that road. I was on Fox News, and O'Reilly was saying, why don't you give him a chance? And I'm like, well, he told you what he would do if he got the chance. Why should we give him a chance to do that? And Trump has laid out his program, and it is no good for humanity. And everybody who's got an ounce of justice in their hearts needs to stand against it and stand with us in acting to stop it, not just registering that you're not with it, but acting to stop it, taking the chance, and it's a real chance, to build the kind of resistance that could prevent this regime from taking the reins of power.
You know, one of the things, too, and just coming off of what you're saying, this point about the danger of normalizing, you know, what's going on today, that these are extraordinary times. And I kept thinking about this one book I was reading about the rise of Hitler in Germany and the history of that. And one of the things that the point that this author kept making is that after all of the murders that the Hitler regime committed, after all the devastation and the horrors that they brought down in the world, when you step back and look at it, no one ever questioned, no one in Germany ever questioned the legitimacy of that regime in terms of, you know, mass forces or something. I'm sure there were individuals here and there, but no one actually stood up and said, wait a minute, the legitimacy of this, it's illegitimate. And there was this whole question of normalizing, where you look at, like, even thinking, well, we can vote them out, or we can do this, or we can do that. This is a leap with Trump, not sounding, you know, oh my God, the sky is falling, but this is a real leap in what this system is determined to do in terms of the, you know, the kind of rule that at least a significant section of them have decided is necessary and desirable right now.
Yeah, because see, what this is this is a section of the powers that be determining that they need an extreme program to keep the system of exploitation and oppression that is capitalism, imperialism, intact and in effect, and the U.S.'s dominant role in it. And they will carry this out. That's the point. That's the message behind Trump's election. And all along the way, I mean, the man spent the Christmas holidays, a time when people talk about peace and goodwill towards men, tweeting about starting a new nuclear arms race. You know, he goes to do a press conference, I think it was yesterday, and he's telling CNN that they're fake news. And he doesn't want to call them. He doesn't want to hear from them. And they should shut up. And when you think about doing that in relation to part of the mainstream media, what does that say for people throughout society, ordinary people? What does that say for black people who have already suffered vicious oppression? And that oppression is not only going to continue, it's going to be amped up on steroids. The same for the attacks on Latinos, attacks on women, all of this stuff is going to be amped up. And the ability to resist it, to even protest it, is going to be closed in on. We cannot allow that to happen. We cannot look at this like, well, we'll get them the next time. We need to act to stop them before they get started. Build up the kind of resistance, the kind of unity, and the kind of morality that says, we will not accept these horrors. We don't care if the Electoral College says that he's legitimately the president. The program that he's brought forward is illegitimate, and we should act to stop it. Because, look, people did not do that in Germany. and history looks back at them and says, why did you go along with it? Well, right now, those counseling, accepting the reality of Trump's election, are telling us to go along with the 21st century Hitler. Because I actually meant it when questioned by Judge Jeanine about the differences between Hitler and Trump. I said, well, one of them had the little black mustache and the other one has an orange squirrel on his head for hair. But the essence of the program is the same. The essence of the agenda is the same. It's fascism, and it's unacceptable, and we need to act to stop it.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this. You know, we got to talk about how. I mean, because this is a big thing that everybody is going, okay, cool, I'm down with you, but how? I mean, you're talking, really, you're talking 5.5 days as of this moment. This is a big, big chunk of history you're trying to push forward here, right? And so how do you actually see doing this? You began to talk about this, but I think it's important for people to understand, you know, this is, okay, I'm down with you, but how the hell are you going to do this in 5 days?
Yeah, that question came up at our meeting last night. And the point is, tomorrow afternoon, 4 o'clock, people are going to gather in McPherson Square, and right today, everybody who's at the meeting is fanning out across the city and reaching out at college campuses, in the neighborhoods, going out to high schools, going out to metro stops, going into nightlife spots, concerts, and the rest, and calling on people to be there with us. We need to have hundreds of people in the streets tomorrow afternoon, and from the afternoon into the evening, marching through areas where people gather, bringing out to them the message of stop Trump before he gets started, spreading the word, enlisting them into it. And those hundreds can begin to change the mood of the much larger numbers of people who hate this but don't think there's anything that we can do about it. We can begin through our actions to show them that there is a way that this could be dealt with. And those hundreds would be calling out to thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions to get with this. And if we can get a dynamic going where those numbers build every night and where this is happening, not just in D.C., but all across the country, then it does call out to those tens of millions of people who feel the anguish, the fear, and the outrage over the prospects of a Trump regime taking the reins of power. And that, combined with the differences at the top, can create the kind of political crisis that could prevent this regime from taking power. You know, and something similar just went down in South Korea, you know, where the president who was using the presidency of Korea, South Korea, to line her pockets and the pockets of those around them, like many presidents before her had done in Korea. But in the context of masses of people flooding into the streets, in part over the mishandling by the government of a ferry boat accident that killed hundreds of people, then the question of hundreds of thousands and even millions of people being in the streets, staying in the streets, forced the crisis that those at the top settled by ousting this president. Now, the situation isn't exactly the same, but what is the same are the ingredients. Upsurge from below, questioning and calling into question the legitimacy of a president. In this case, it's a president-elect, and splits at the top over the program that the president elect represent. So this is what we're working at doing. This is what we're aiming to do. And what is required right now is that everybody who hears about this has got to ask themselves, where do I stand on this? What is history going to say about what I did in this time? You know, is it going to be recorded that me and people like me went with this because it looked like the the only realistic course to take, or will history say that a core of people who were enough to make it mount to be a critical mass saw that the interests of humanity were demanding that this not be accepted, that people stand up and reject this? And that's the message we're putting to people, and we're putting it to them, you know, in the in the neighborhoods, on the campuses, at the high schools, at the night spots. We're putting it out through social media and every other way that we can put it out, and aiming to bring that critical mass together beginning tomorrow here in D.C. at 4 o'clock, and then going out into the late afternoon, into the evening, and even the night. And then it's beginning in other cities across the country this weekend as well.
All right, Carl Dix, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
I want to thank you for having me on. And people need to go to the website refusefascism.org to get involved.
All right.
To find out what's happening where they are, or to start something where they are, and to let us know about it.
And we'll be talking to you again in the course of all this coming week, I hope. So that'll be, I look forward to that and hearing what's going on and helping, you know, helping people here understand and participate in all this in whatever way they can. So I think this is including going there if they can. So I think that's important. So, all right, man. So thanks again, man.
Thank you for having me on, Mike.
All right. Take care, Carl. Bye.
Bye.
We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back with our next guest, Layla Hathaway. So stay tuned.
All right. If you're sad about it and you just can't see, then let's talk about it. You can lean on me. I'm your friend, don't doubt it, to the bottom of the deep blue sea.
All right, welcome back. And that is from my next guest, Layla Hathaway. And it's a piece called Lean On Me. Well, joining us now is someone whose music I've really liked for quite some time, and who, as I could judge from based on following her Twitter account, has been exceedingly active in all of this stuff going on around the rise of fascism, Trump, and the need to stand up and oppose this. Layla Hathaway, welcome to the show.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. Let me put it this way. When I'm doing the show and talking to people that are talking about all this way that they are going to take responsibility for the world and what happens in it, I'm very happy at that point. So that
Absolutely.
Goes good. Now, I'm going to jump into this because I got a lot to ask you. You're one of the signers of the call, No, in the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept the Fascist America. What was it about that call that made you feel compelled to sign on?
What's interesting is that I feel like I represent probably a lot of Americans that look at the current state of affairs and feel like, what can I do? Is there something I can do? Maybe I'm not as politically active as my friends, and maybe I don't label myself like a revolutionary, but what is it that I can do to stand in solidarity with the people that feel like me? And when I read that call, I knew that it was something that I had to sign. I know that it's something that I have to let people know about. That's my responsibility, is to reflect this time. And I think for others like me, I think there are going to be a lot of people coming on to sign this call that maybe don't know how to mobilize otherwise. I think this is a great way to get people involved that otherwise would not really put that on the line and really get involved.
Well, you've also found another really good way of bringing this into the Twitterverse. It's fascinating how much goes back and forth around this and how much impact you've actually had. In a certain sense, I was looking at it last night and thinking, damn, man, this is some stuff going on here. So I think that's really important.
That's good to know. I mean, social media for me is a supernatural disposition, and I've had a website that was kind of like Twitter or Facebook since 1998. And so I really do communicate with people every day, and for me, that is my mode of communication. Twitter is great to say what you need to say quickly. I do have a lot of trolls, though, on Twitter, which is amazing. They keep popping up. But as long as I can say something, I will say something.
Now, let's talk about that, because you've been energetically calling out Trump's crimes and his crimes against humanity still to come. So let's talk about that. And what are the stakes involved in all this? So let's talk about the crimes first.
Oh.
Yeah. We got about 10 more minutes, 15 minutes.
It's amazing. You know what's interesting is, I think I was speaking to someone last night, that as a Black woman, I feel like sometimes I sort of live in this bubble of being, you know, as everyone does, we see the world through our own lens. And so when I explained to my friend last night that sort of hanging out with older Black folks, this is nothing new. The stories that we're hearing right now about deportation and about racism and about the cops and all of this is stuff that the generation before us and the generation before them knew as a fact of life every day. There are so many things to count. A lot of what I'm pointing out, like on my Twitter and on my Facebook, are the super huge, egregious things. There are so many things happening under the surface of everything, you can't even catch it all. And it's happening at such a rate. I mean, I think we're at an unprecedented place in history where every day we are all looking at each other like, is this for real? And so my task is really to say something when I see something. It's so surreal. It's like we're kind of in a dream state. And occasionally I just go to my Twitter and point out, like, everybody sees, and we all see this. Are we all going to stand idly by and let him hire his son-in-law as his advisor? Are we going to stand by and accept that he's divested from his businesses when he's really just handed it to his sons? Are we going to stand by when he says he's going to deport? I mean, it's an amazing time that we live in right now. It's too much to actually name.
And imagine that this guy actually is sitting there and he's the one person, and he will be the one person in the entire world who has the ability to unleash the most savage, barbaric, and powerful military force in the world with all of its nukes. And he's the one person that has the authority to do this, that has the ability to do this. And you put that in the midst of everything else. It's a horrifying prospect here.
It is very scary. And his Twitter feed is off the chain. He is the most thinly skinned. It's going to be an amazing time to witness. I don't even see how it's possible that it's happening, yet it is, you know? So that's why everybody mm-hmm. has to say something. Everybody has to keep their eye on the ball, and everybody has to get out in these streets and get on your socials and get on your phone and talk to your friends and say something.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with the multiple Grammy Award-winning artist, singer Layla Hathaway, and we're talking about the fascist Donald Trump and the movement to say, no, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. You know, I think that's really important because, you know, it's so much, you also can run into a more cynical, even when people are hopeful and they say, okay, you know, yeah, I'm with you. But then they say, but really, you know, you got to be realistic. And the best we can do is, we'll face it. He's going to be there 4 years and we'll just have to deal with it. We'll have to oppose him and deal with it.
No,
that's deadly, I think.
I don't buy it. I don't know that he'll be there 4 years. One thing I know is that nothing is promised to us, not even tomorrow. So the fact that people are laying down does not make sense to me. I think we have a chance right now to really affect change in our society. And it's on such a deep level at this point. We have a shot. You know, this is not an unprecedented situation. I think that there's the time right now is for people to get out in these streets, and millions of people can affect change. We can go from hundreds of thousands to millions of people.
Exactly.
We have to get out there.
Yeah, I think that's an extremely important point, and one that isn't brought out nearly enough, you know, broadly in society. But it's one that I know that Refuse Fascism has been bringing out regularly. And I think it is important what they've said, too, around this, the fact that, look, there are a lot of people in deep anguish and looking for some way to deal with this. And,
right.
And you know, this is something that I do. I personally think it is definitely achievable what people are aiming for in this. So that's extremely important. Now, I wanted to ask you another thing which comes up quite a bit, too, which is the importance of artists stepping up around this. And it's interesting because we have a mutual friend who I hadn't been in touch with him for a long time. And when I talked to him, he said, oh, you've got to talk to Leila Hathaway. I said, oh, yeah, okay, good. And you know, and he's an artist and he's a musician. And I think there's actually something that I wanted to explore a little bit with you in terms of the importance of artists stepping up in a big way around this.
Mm-hmm. You know, in my mind, it's the artist's responsibility to report, to take it in and feel it and be the alchemist for everybody to be able to report what is happening. So as an artist, it's my job to tell you what's going on in the streets. It's also my job to help you fall in love and help you make a baby and all of that other stuff you want to do and feel fabulous, you know what I mean? But it's really my job and my responsibility as a conscious human being to let you know what's happening. I think that my father was part of a generation of artists that were coming out of such a huge movement in the 60s and 70s, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, that had so much to say and so much to get off that the music, by and large, became that expression for the country. So as a musician myself, and particularly as a musician that I consider myself a soul music musician, I you know, it's hard to put a label on what I do, but I think that the foundation of it is soul music. Black music, particularly in America, the rhythm and blues movement sort of came out of telling the story of blacks in America, and then subsequently just America as a whole. So my job really is to reflect what is happening and to speak on it and to make it, put it into a little morsel that people can just take in and eat and be fed by. And that's very important to me, to be able to, you know, there's all the stuff that's happening and everything is gravy and I'm excited. I'm nominated for 2 Grammys this year and I've got a lot of stuff going on, but it's hard to even breathe for that moment and be happy on that level because there is so much crap happening in this country that I know I need to speak on so that people can hear it. So absolutely, I definitely feel like the responsibility of artists is to report.
Tell me this, and this will be our last question, but you know, when you're looking at everything that's at stake now, what do you say to people right now who, like I said, are anguished or angry and all this? What do you say to people right now in terms of them looking and saying, what the hell do I do right now?
Yeah, it's hard right now because it's like the 7 stages of anger. Like, we're all still in shock that this is actually happening. One thing that I can tell you to do is go to refusefascism.org, sign the call, read the call first, read it, and then sign it, and talk to your friends about how you feel and get people mobilized. Get in these streets. Make a video. Get on your socials. Tell your folks at work. Talk to them during lunch. Talk to your boss. Go march. Do something. You have to stand up right now because now is not the time to sit idly by.
All right. Leila Hathaway, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll have to have you back to talk about your music, too, because I'm really I'm intensely into
Absolutely.
Your music. Okay? All right.
Absolutely.
All
thank
right.
You.
Cool. Take care now. Bye-bye. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with multi-Grammy award-winning musician Leila Hathaway. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back with Arturo O'Farrell, so stay tuned. All right, welcome back. That's just a hint of the music coming from our next guest, Arturo O'Farrell. And I recently had the opportunity, in fact, early this morning, the opportunity to talk with Arturo. He was in an airport in Miami, and he was just eager to get his opinion about all this. And he's one of the signatories of the statement, "No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America." And he's one of the signatories of it, one of the early signatories of it. And he was talking with us about basically his thoughts on all this. So here he is, Grammy Award-winning musician Arturo O'Farrell. So check this out. And joining us now to talk about this, "No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America," and all the activities that are going up around that now in the lead up to the scheduled inauguration. all the activities going on everywhere around this, but particularly down in D.C., where actually people are pulling to get millions of people to come into the streets, many millions of people to come into the streets to stop the Trump-Pence regime before it starts. And as I said, joining us now is one of the early initiators of this, one of the early signers onto this call. His name is Arturo O'Farrell. He's a Grammy Award-winning composer, jazz pianist, bandleader, and educator, and his band is the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. Arturo, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Basically, what is it that attracted you to this whole movement, this No in the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept a Fascist America? What made you sign on to that and be part of that?
Well, I've been a New Yorker most of my life and subject to the ridicules of Donald Trump's imaginings and his posturings and his fakeness in every way. We've known about Donald Trump in New York since the beginning. And the idea that he became a contender for the presidential election is impossible for New Yorkers to believe, first of all. Second of all, in every way, shape, or form, his campaign reflected fascist policies. He's a racist. He's a warmonger. He's a liar. He's under a suit for numerous lawsuits. And I would say in every way, with his power tripping and his trying to control the media and trying to control dissension, he is the very definition of fascism. I never thought I'd see the day where someone with such a lack of character would even be considered for this position at the nation's highest office. And I'm just shocked and demoralized. But I also believe that you must rise to the occasion and fight with all your might, with every second you have and every breath you take, the imposition of evil, pure, unadulterated evil. You must fight it with every... And it's just, I have no recourse but to take part in this movement.
Mm-hmm. That's very important what you're saying, and I'd like to pursue it a little bit more just to give people a sense of this. When you're talking about how evil Trump is, there's actually this program that he has been basically manifesting the entire time he's been around and, you know, has been really pushing this. And it's actually meant some big things. As you said, in New York, it's meant some very, you know, like I was just thinking about what happened with the Central Park Five and when he was calling them for them to be executed. And he's still pushing for them to, you know, pay the price for a crime that they were actually shown to have been innocent of committing. You know, and so I keep thinking of this in terms of what you're saying. You know, if you could just dig into this a little bit more about some particular things that really drove you up a wall about Trump.
Well, first of all, he denies being a racist, but he distinctly and proven in a court of law denied housing to African Americans when he was a real estate maven back in the 70s. I just think racism is the epitome of evil. If you think for any reason, especially because of your genetic makeup, that you're more valuable than another human being, that's the fundamental tenet of evil. And for him, he's been documented saying that he thinks he has he's a better human being than other people, that he deserves more. That's just enough. Plus the fact, another thing that really got me is that he continues to deny that he stiffed hundreds of small businesses, that he literally didn't pay his bills to people whose livelihoods depended. He directly contributed to the demise of many businesses. I mean, the whole lawsuit involving Trump University, which he duped innocent students, elderly people, out of their life savings. This man is so disgusting. He's a cancerous polyp. Everything he does is fraudulent and filled with greed, and he is the very definition of evil. The Central Park Five was particularly haunting to me because I was around New York around that time period. And the whole idea of wilding, and actually had some tangential contact with the victim. And the victim has gone on record saying that she understood that these folks were not implicated, that they were not guilty. But he went on and on and on and on with his hatred and his venom. And this man is so unbelievably, he's such a mediocrity. To hang on to something that's been proved otherwise in a court of law is unbelievable to me. He is the prime example of the worst, the possible worst in humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I think that for us as human beings to tolerate this moment is impossible. We can't. We, every single person of conscience and goodwill and character, must act out. Go to Washington, demonstrate, speak your mind, prayer meetings. I don't care what you do. I don't care if you're conservative. I don't care if you're liberal, Republican, communist. I don't give a hoot. I don't care if you're pro-Trump. Get out and demonstrate the fact that a complete shame, a complete fraud, a complete failure is about to take command of this empire.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Arturo Farrell, a five-time Grammy Award-winning composer, jazz pianist, bandleader, and educator. His band is the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra, and he is deeply involved in the movement to stop the Trump-Pence regime before it starts. No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. One thing that comes up immediately as you're talking about this, there's a point here where actually all the things you say are definitely true, but then there's this point about this guy actually being a fascist, and you've mentioned this earlier on in our conversation, and I'd like to explore that just a little bit with you, but then also talk about some of these things in terms of what attracted you to this movement, because this movement is actually pretty different than a lot of them. It's saying they want to stop in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America, and their aim is to stop the inauguration, to stop their aim is to stop the rise of, or the seeding of the Trump regime.
Well, I mean, fascism, as I understand it, is rooted in a kind of virulent nationalism in which a demagogue feels that they can control for the good of a nation or good of a nationalistic cause the people with an iron fist, that his word is law, that he's unquestionable. A fascist is someone who feels that they're above examination by any kind of peer system. And that just goes against every tenet of American democracy that we've had or pretended to have. But in this case, besides it being a demagogue, besides his belittling the press, besides his not being wanted to question, besides his inability to listen to his ill-advised advisors, besides his inability, he wants to take away basic rights. He wants to destroy basic human rights to redress and ask questions and to ask journalistic integral questions. I mean, this is in every case, especially beginning with this nationalism, with this definition of someone as more American than someone else, with the kind of talk he's had about Islam, the deportation of Islamic Americans, the illegal deportation of undocumented people. This is fascism, cold and simple. And it has got to be called that. It's got to be called what it is. He is Hitler, only really, in some ways, much worse. Who knows where he'll take this? I mean, it's got to be called fascism. And the reason this movement, well, I've been tangentially involved with Carl Dix and Cornel West and the mass incarceration, stopping mass incarceration movement, with Black Lives Matter. I've been involved with all this stuff for years, ever since, really strongly, when Ramar Lee Graham, a young black teenager in New York, was killed by the NYPD. And the circumstances of his death were so embarrassing to the NYPD that I was outraged, and it just was like a thunderbolt reaching into my soul. And ever since then, I've spoken out very strongly in every platform I have, as a musician, as an artist, as a speaker, as a spokesperson, as an activist. I've used every platform I have to call this country and this regime, especially that's about to take place, the fascist police state that it is. Make no bones about it, people. We're living in a police state, mm-hmm. in a fearsome one. And nothing less than the overthrow of this police state is what's called for. Mm-hmm. Those might be strong words to some people, but give Trump a year or two, and there'll be hundreds of millions more of us who believe that the overthrow of this system is the only solution possible.
Well, actually, to me, it seems like one of the reasons for the incredible importance of all this stuff around this whole campaign around no, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America, is actually if people give Trump a couple of years, who the hell knows what's going to be around, man? You know, it's like it's not funny. It's a serious situation.
This guy doesn't care. Once he starts World War III, he's going to jump into his jet, fly his putrid family off to some tropical destination, and watch from a distance, while hundreds of millions of American lives bleed in the streets or are exterminated instantly. He doesn't give a shit. Absolutely none.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me this. There are
and
some
I think
people...
Americans should be on alert. They have a criminal about to take possession, a criminal, a liar, a thief, a failed businessman, a sexual predator. They have about as cancerous a human being as humanly possible about to take the executive office.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me this. There are some people who will argue, he's dangerous. He's very dangerous. But what we have to do is actually find the ways to sort of talk to him and try and you know, lessen.
There's no talking to this man. I think those people are living a fantasy. He has shown himself to be remarkably efficient at blocking out any advising from his own people. He's a mess. This man is a mess. There's nothing left to do but to demand that he be torn down and that his administration be torn down. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and say it again, that this entire system be reconstructed. Mm-hmm. This is no longer, it was tolerable when we have had for years income inequality, and that's okay. But now this man has directly threatened the lives of my children and your children and the children of people all around us. Mm-hmm. This has got to stop. He needs to be overthrown in every way possible. And I think the way to do it is to go out, demand, demonstrate, spend time in the streets, civil disobedience, refuse to participate in the economy, refuse to participate in the virtual world. Just take over. Mm-hmm. Refuse to participate in this. Just refuse. Refuse fascism in every way possible.
And one more big question for you. I understand that you are involved with something called the Musicians Against Fascism Concert. Let's talk about that.
I have I'm grateful. I'm really grateful. I'm not a communist because I'm religious. But I will say I'm grateful that I have been given a platform and I've been able to gather a group of heroes, friends, musicians, the best musicians on the planet. That sounded very Trumpian, didn't it? The best musicians on the planet. No, they're wonderful musicians from all over the world who are coming together on Thursday, January 19th, to put on a concert, Musicians Against Fascism. We have an incredible crew of people, Rudras Mahanthapa, Vijay Iyer, MacArthur Fellows, Guggenheim Fellows, outstanding vocalists, composers, award-winning artists. We're in conversation with Harry Belafonte to come out and perform. It's people standing up for, this is what we should be doing, using our platform, using our art, using our lives, our fingers, our very fingers, to demand that this system be overthrown. So we're going to do it. And you know what? 19th of January at Symphony Space 95th and Broadway. I know it's West Coast out there. But starting at 7:30 p.m., some of the brightest lights in music and contemporary improvised music will be performing in support of RefuseFascism.org, in support of people who are going to Washington, in support of blankets and water and accommodations and Washington Post ads, in support of the incredible amount of work that still needs to be done to see this illegitimate regime not be installed.
All right, Arturo Farrell, thank you very much for joining us today, man.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. My honor. Thank you.
All right. Take care now. All right. Welcome back. That was Arturo Farrell, multi-Grammy award-winning composer, jazz pianist, bandleader, and educator. And his band is the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. All right. That brings us to the end of yet another show. And before we go out, I want to let you know about a call that came out from Carl Dix and Cornel West. And it's a call to take up the eye challenge. All right. And that's, they're calling on people to wear a giant eye for illegitimate. And the gist of it is Donald Trump and his fascist regime are illegitimate. And on Wednesday, January 18th, Carl Dix and Cornel West have called for people to wear the letter I for illegitimate all day long. Wear the I because we refuse to accept an illegitimate fascist Trump-Pence regime. And that's step one. Step two, make a video and post it on Facebook, Twitter, and or Instagram. Be creative and let the world know that Trump and Pence are indeed illegitimate. And those are the words of Carl Dix and Cornel West. Now, I want to let people know, if you want to get in touch with Refuse Fascism, you can contact them at their email, which is info@refusefascism.org. Once again, that's info@refusefascism.org, or you can call him on the phone at 917-407-1286. Once again, that's 917-407-1286. And as we do each and every week, I want to thank all of the guests who came onto the show today. Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party, singer-songwriter Layla Hathaway, and musician-songwriter Arturo O'Farrell. And I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, my board op for today, Kiana Williams, and each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. And we're going to go out now with a song from Layla Hathaway called Little Ghetto Boy. And part of the beauty of this is it's a song that her father, Donny Hathaway, just seared the hearts of the world with.
Ghetto boy, playing in the ghetto streets. What you gonna do when you grow up and have to face responsibility? Will you spend your days and nights in a pool room? Will you sell caps of madness in the neighborhood? Boy, your daddy was blown away. He robbed that grocery store. Don't you know that was a sad, sad old day? All your young life you've seen such a misery and pain. World is a cruel place to live and it ain't gonna change. So young, you got so far to go. And I don't think you're rich, you go, young man, hanging around the pool room door. Look out, y'all.